6 months ago, when you came in, you had some notions about how it was going to go. How has it fulfilled what you predicted was going to happen when you got in here?
Well, that's a great question. It was a question that the Gaming Commission just asked me a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And what I told them was that because Resorts was operating in bankruptcy for so long and they had a real tough road there because of that, and everything was depressed, we thought that when we took over, we'd be in a big hole.
Right.
Instead, we found out that we were in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. So it was a lot worse than we thought it was.
Right.
And we really have had to claw our way out. Mm-hmm. And we're still climbing. It's just been real tough. And the market, as bad as I thought it was going to be, I was hoping that it had bottomed out.
Right,
that
you got right to the bottom, right? Yeah.
And we came in December, and rather than bottom out, it's just been declining since then, too. So it's sort of like a double whammy. We were in a bigger hole than we thought, and the market has continued to decline. So it's been very, very challenging.
Right. This is going to take a little longer than I guess you anticipated when you first came on.
I did say that I felt that we'd be operating in the black in July, and I think we're close to that, although we didn't hold good. I mean, we'd really be in good shape if we would hold normally.
We would have had July. Large profit if we would hold normally.
Right.
Yeah. So I think we're pretty much where I said we'd be, but I was hoping that some of the bad months wouldn't be as bad as they were.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So we're kind of, I mean, even if by the end of the year, if we have a 25% improvement in EBITDA and everybody else is worse, I mean, those statistics might sound good, but it's still a pretty good size loss.
Right. So we placed a lot of confidence in the economy getting better,
right.
And unfortunately we're kind of faced with the perfect storm of a stagnant or declining economy still, with higher gas prices,
right.
And still facing the onslaught of constant competition over the last 3 years coming online all around us.
Sure, and I was just up in Yonkers last week. They had broke ground on another 60,000 square feet up there, so and of course we're looking at Aqueduct in the next year or so. The competition's not over yet.
Boy, I think that's going to be some severe competition for them. I think it could hurt Atlantic City a little bit, but I don't see it being a major problem, because I think any of the convenience gamblers that don't want to drive 2.5 hours to Atlantic City, they'd be playing over at Yonkers
or Sands,
or something where they're a lot closer. So, but I think it's going to cannibalize some of those people on that closer net.
And frankly, I hadn't been to Yonkers since it opened, and the experience there just can't be anywhere near Atlantic City. It's just a dark, rows and rows of slot machines, and there's nothing else there.
Well, nothing around us really can. There's no other place you can walk from one casino to another and experience all the different shows, the different bars, the shopping. And I think the biggest problem for Atlantic City now is the midweek revenue.
Right.
The weekends are still strong. Mm-hmm. Every weekend we're sold out. Occupancies are great. Gaming revenues are good. But midweek, the customers, instead of where they used to drive down after work, gamble, and go home, are now just staying closer to home and still coming down here on the weekends.
Right.
Yeah, you really can't compare. Everything else you see in Pennsylvania and what you're seeing in Maryland, they're pretty much people don't stay in those places.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're convenience locations. They're doing well because there's such strong population right around them. But for a real destination resort experience, you have to come here,
right?
Just like Aaron said.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some of the marketing efforts. I mean, for as you mentioned, when this property was in bankruptcy, they were doing virtually no marketing at all. You've moved the needle rather substantially since you've been on. Let's talk about the strategy to appeal to the LGBT community. Why did you target them, and how have you done it?
Well, to me, it's the same the same logic that applies to targeting the Asian market, for example.
Right.
And the Asian market's lucrative and it's part of our society, and we want to go after it. It's the same as targeting the young affluent part of the market, and it's just another market segment of human beings that can be lucrative and positive. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably one of the best markets to go after, and because of all the reasons, there's a lot of disposable income. Mm-hmm. It's part of our society that's there, and we decide to go after it, and not in I don't like to do anything in a hypocritical way. I think some of the places would go after the LGBT market and say you could come in on our worst day of the week, for example, midweek on Wednesday, and we're gonna have a special thing for you and open our arms to you.
Right.
And that's almost.
But don't come by on the
weekend. Yeah, but don't come. Yeah, don't come on a weekend. Right. Don't come other times.
Right.
That's like a slap in the face.
And it's not genuine, and we want to take a more genuine approach and give them something they can call their own.
Right.
And now what you're going to see is everyone was afraid to do it at first because they didn't want to chase out the other crowd, the straight crowd that they were getting. But I think you'll see now that a lot of other properties are going to copy. They see what's working for us. But I think the LGBT crowd is a little... They're smart and they know what's genuine and what isn't.
Sure.
So I think it's to our benefit.
Right.
So.
And they're very loyal as well.
Yeah, they're very loyal, and they you know, they understand that we really stuck our neck out, but it was also, besides being a lucrative market, it was the right thing to do.
Okay.
And you know, it was the idea really was discussed by John Schultz, who's a local guy, was a politician for years, and he's a friend of ours, and we talked about it a lot, and he ran a lot of those gay clubs and things, and was really knowledgeable with respect to that, and so we just went from there.
Okay.
We really staked our intentions early.
Yeah.
First thing we did before we even opened the club was we raised the rainbow flag out front,
right
along with the American flag.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Now, you've got several circuses going on across the street in the tents. How's that working for you?
Well, you know, it's good and bad.
Right.
And we're thinking of, it's good from the standpoint it's bringing incremental people in. And it's good from the standpoint that it's a tremendous circus. It's really great. It's bad from the standpoint it's taking a lot of parking. And so we're thinking of bringing it in inside in our showroom. Because the circus is phenomenal, so we may do that and just reestablish our parking out outside. I originally thought the experience of being under the big top would be a plus, which I think it is. I mean, it's air conditioned, heated, and everything, but at the expense of the parking, I'm not so sure that's going to, and I think we may bring it inside and let people experience it.
We're at capacity parking sometimes at 7 or 8 now on Friday because that took up a few hundred spots.
Right. Plus, people who come to it have to park somewhere. They park in your garage.
Yeah, and our employees are parking off-site now, and that's a tough thing. So that could happen fairly shortly. We're talking about that right now.
What's your overall philosophy on entertainment? Are you targeting any specific market then?
Well, I think anything that we think are going to bring people in, we've done country, which was great. We've had great response from everything. Even the Broadway shows like 42nd Street were great. We had one show we created ourselves was good.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the standards like Wayne Newton, that was excellent too. So it's really a broad spectrum of entertainment. And of course, if we bring the circus in, it'll be different again. But we're just doing everything we can to try to tracked all segments, and we've also done ethnic shows and been very successful with that. So, pretty much covers everything.
Okay, so you're looking for the niche markets, but also the whole broad spectrum of niche markets. Then,
yeah, we're eclectic.
Okay. I don't want to say you're throwing everything up against a wall to see what sticks.
That's what eclectic means,
right? Okay.
Yeah, we, you know what, Steve Wynn, who was one of the most brilliant people that I've ever worked for. Taught me a lot of things, and I find myself always quoting him. But when I first started with him at the Golden Nugget, I think he was a little worried about my accounting background. Mm-hmm. So, because I was a CPA and had a master's degree, but I was in law enforcement for 10 years, and that beat a lot of that stuff out of me. But he didn't know that, so he said one day, he says, Dennis, I want you to know this is really important, that we're revenue-oriented first and we're cost-conscious second in this company. And he said, so that's how you have to be. And I said, well, that's the way I am anyway, but I've always believed that, what he said. And so when we came in here, we turned all the revenue faucets on every one of them.
Right.
And then we start tweaking everything, which we're in the process of doing now.
Right. Well, you know, he's doing the opposite with Garth Brooks. He's losing money on every show, so I don't know if he still has that philosophy.
But on the other hand, there's a lot of stuff you can't quantify either. Mm-hmm. And entertainment is one of them. You can't just look at the numbers when you're trying to do that. And,
sure.
And Garth Brooks is such a phenomenal entertainer, and I think having him there says something about your property too, and how it's more image, and how it's very difficult to quantify the effect of things you do for image.
Yeah, no question. I mean, when you have the entertainer that everybody wants to see, and you're the only place they can go to see him, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the casino floor. You know, like a lot of places in town, suddenly you have too much floor space. What have you done to cut that down and to make it look like you didn't cut it down?
We filled up we pulled off about 200 games so far. Mm-hmm. I think we were up to, when we took over, 2,100 or so.
Yeah.
Now we're down to around 19. We filled it with our promotion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 3-stage promotion. Everybody gets a try daily. You can earn extra attempts. And the first one is tic-tac-toe, where you play tic-tac-toe against can't say bimbo, but they said a Dixie, 20s lady who jokes around with you.
We called her the tic-tac-toe playing bimbo, but human resources got on us, so we had to change.
Okay.
There's two other promotions that go along with this. That filled up a lot of space, and it's kind of an entertainment piece in the center of the casino. And we're looking at building out some of the empty space we have left, filling it with retail, restaurants, and other options, which unfortunately we don't want to do the construction in the middle of the summer, so we haven't started.
Right.
But we're looking at a bunch of different options for that.
Do you have the flexibility to offer better odds at the gaming table, or better video poker pay tables, or higher slot payouts, that kind of thing? You know, being owned by one company is got to be limiting to a certain extent when it comes to that kind of thing.
If you look at our hold percentage for the last month or two in slots, we're we're one of the loosest in town.
Okay.
We have the loosest video poker games you can find on the market.
Right.
We have wide variety, every slot game.
Mm-hmm.
But our overall hold hasn't changed. It's actually gone down.
And our table games rules are also liberal. We have 5x odds and craps and things. And we could do just about anything we want. And I think what you're referring to is the advantage of being a small company as opposed to something that's so centralized, like a large company where they got to go through committee after committee to make decisions. Mm-hmm. We don't have to go through all that red tape.
Right. Are you participating in the discounting losses type of thing that they're doing at some of the other casinos in town with the high rollers and things like that?
Unfortunately, I think that's gotten way out of hand.
Oh, absolutely.
And we took a stance early and we said we're not going to fight. And when the Tropicana got beat by that guy, we got offered, he wanted to come in here, and we turned him down. We said, it's not a smart offer, and almost common sense tells you, unfortunately, and you can run it through any computer program and it'll verify it. But
but the truth is, Aaron's the one who turned him down. I didn't even know about it. And so That was actually a good move.
but we have a discount policy. It's per player basis. Most mm-hmm. of them are quarterly discounts,
right.
And you have to have at least three trips. So
it's right. so a long term thing. It's not just right. You can't come in and hit you one time and that's it.
No, and if you have a customer who comes in exactly how they're doing and plays one day, loses $200,000 as a 20% discount. Mm-hmm. Next day comes in, wins 20. He's all of a sudden even gaming wise, but he's up $40,000.
Right,
and the odds and the games are almost. You know, even if they know what they're doing.
Sure.
Yeah, if you think about it, when you think about discounts, it's pretty interesting. If you're giving somebody a 20% discount on losses, then in reality, you're really giving them close to a 40% discount because the edges are so small. Mm-hmm. If for a second, when thinking about this, you assume there's no edge because it's such a small number that if you assume they win half the time, lose half the time, the times that you beat them, you give them a 20% discount on that, but when they beat you, you get no discount. Mm-hmm. So that's equivalent to a 40% discount.
Exactly, right,
so you're when you give them those kinds of discounts, on top of that, these places will give them
cash to walk in, which you didn't hear about any cash they give them on top.
Yeah,
of them.
Yeah, cash to walk in, match play, airfares, mm-hmm. everything, and the comps on top of that.
Right.
They basically destroyed their edge. And mm-hmm. if you listen to these guys,
no, they turn the edge into the player's
right. Yeah, the player has an edge.
It's gone. Mm-hmm. So if you listen to the guys like the guy that beat the Trout for $5 million, he basically said that the deals you get are so strong that we now have the edge,
right?
And so you can't mm-hmm. lose,
right?
And so and they're smart; they understand the math like that.
Yeah, they do. They do the math before they come in and present it to the casino.
Exactly.
Do they even run the numbers before they agree to it? I mean, doesn't seem like they do.
I mean, there's no
no. We have programs where if we're making it even we don't make any deals like that,
right.
But when we're making deals, if it's a sort of an odd mm-hmm. deal, we run it through some simulations, and modeling, and so we know what does our edge and where the return is.
And unfortunately, it's just gotten out of hand. When the economy took a dive a couple of years ago, everybody had to compete for those high end players because there weren't as many of them. And so, how do you get them to come over? You offer them more than the other, and
you're in trouble when you're using credit and discounts to market your place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's not right. It doesn't make any sense. You know what? Well, I remember another thing Steve Wynn said. He was angry with one of my casino hosts that proposed some kind of deal. I mean, the guy never cleared it with me because I wouldn't have let him do it. Mm-hmm. But he just brought it up with Steve Wynn in a meeting. And Steve looked at him and said, "You know what?" He said, "Anybody could do that. You know, my 10-year-old daughter could walk in there and be as host and do as well as you do by giving everything away, and she'd be just as unsuccessful as you are." And he said, "But he said the people, the great hosts in my mind, like a Charlie Meyerson, could tell people no." And have the person walk out of the room just as happy as when they came in.
Right.
He said anybody could give anything away, but that's what these they're using these deals to market, and that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's counterproductive, and it's not good for anybody. If no one was doing it, everybody would just be making a lot more money. You should be using your product to market, or the way you treat customers as a marketing tool, mm-hmm. not giving them.
And from a player development perspective, the hosts and the marketing people, they love the discounts and competing on that because it makes their job a lot easier.
Sure, right.
So they're rallying all the way up the lines, and finally somebody says, okay, do it, and then downward death spiral.
Right, no question. Now, when you came on, people say, what are they buying resorts for? It's so old. I had to remind them they have this new tower. That was the newest tower in town, and it has great rooms. But you still had, some secondary rooms in this tower, the Ocean Tower. You're fixing that right now.
We're just about finished. We're now putting the furniture and rooms, but all the halls are mm-hmm. done. We've got a lot of furniture in some of the floors, mm-hmm. But it's just about finished, and it's as beautiful as the Rendezvous Tower, mm-hmm. and we've got some of the largest rooms in the city here, averaging 550 square feet with two bathrooms,
right. mm-hmm.
and they're absolutely beautiful, and it's sort of a 1920s theme. The furniture is solid, big, thick wood,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and the rooms are absolutely beautiful, and the customers love it. Now we're starting to see people switching from wanting to stay over there to staying over here because of the ocean views and everything, mm-hmm. as well as the large rooms and just beautiful environment. So now, in my opinion, this place is pristine. Everything is beautiful. We've fixed everything that needed fixing in terms of public space and like every place else, though, in Atlantic City, we got a few leaks that we're still fixing in the roof, but customers don't see that.
Yeah. Let's talk about some general Atlantic City issues. The tourism district is now in place under the CRDA. Plans are being laid out to market Atlantic City as a whole, and I know you participated in those mm-hmm. plans. What's your impression of how that's going so far?
I think it's great. The Casino Association is now working to create this ACA, mm-hmm. and which is a public-private partnership between the state and the casinos.
Right.
And
it's the Atlantic City Alliance.
Yes, Atlantic City Alliance, and we're now discussing in terms of that, but it's going and those discussions are going really well, and. We're dealing a lot with the state police in terms of public safety, and I think the guy that they have doing that is wonderful. Mm-hmm.
When it comes to marketing, this is such a competitive industry. Is everybody on the same page there, in terms of how to get the name of the city out there and how to improve the perception of the city?
Well, I think so. When we get together in association meetings and discussions about these things, I think so. I think there's they realize that citywide events like the rodeo mm-hmm. that we did through the mayor's office was very successful for the city, mm-hmm. and Don Marandino is like a big advocate of citywide entertainment, mm-hmm. and Aaron's got a music festival type thing that he's going to be presenting to the mayor.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, and I think that could be something absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. The groups and things that may come in and sing there. And unlike that previous festival they had out at Bader Field that was sort of isolated out there mm-hmm. and kept people there for 3 days or more, this is going to be all throughout the Atlantic City mm-hmm. and in the boardwalk, and we'll keep people all around the casinos and the hotels and the business
right.
and the local businesses. So I think it's a formula for success, and I think that it'll most likely be embraced by the casinos. All these things show that we can very well work together. Mm-hmm. And the rodeo was a perfect example.
Right.
Nothing's ever perfect.
Sure.
People disagree, but when you have good communication and a common goal, it always seems to work out.
Okay. The regulations have been changed pretty dramatically since the last time we talked. Mm-hmm. How is that affecting your operations? Is it easier to operate in this town now?
Yeah, it's easier. I never felt that it was an obstacle before. Mm-hmm. It was a slower process. It's faster. There's less red tape, mm-hmm. so I think it's all an improvement, really.
Can you get slot machines on the floor quicker?
Yeah.
That was always a problem.
Yeah. Right. That's more like Las Vegas now.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Now, we've got a 800-pound gorilla opening next spring, right? A few doors down from you, which is probably good news. But
yeah.
How do you think the opening of Revel is going to impact the city?
Well, most people know that Kevin and I are like brothers. We've been very close for years, and we were in law enforcement together when I had head of the Special Investigations Bureau for the DGE here. And he was a state trooper assigned me. We worked together forever after we left law enforcement in Nevada and then came back here, worked closely together. and I know Kevin is a very bright guy and a great operator and really cares about people, and his vision that he's creating there that's coming to reality is absolutely stupendous. I think what he walked me and Aaron and my son Doug through there a while back, and I think it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah. Like,
just the way that undulates mm-hmm. the casino does, and all the different levels of things right. he's got going, and he's got some great executives he's going to have there, so I know people are going to be treated well, and he's got great parking. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be fantastic, and I do believe eventually it's going to suck revenue fairly proportionally from different places. Mm-hmm. Maybe it might hurt the Borgata more
right.
more than some of the other ones because it's now the next newest
right.
place.
Right.
It's the newest place, mm-hmm. and the Borgata's always had that
right.
advantage. But you're not going to. They're not just going to sit there and take it. They're preparing. You can see they're preparing for it. They've mm-hmm. redone some rooms and things, and they got a beautiful property. So I think ultimately, though, and within a relatively short period of time, I think it's just going to start. It's going to bring a lot more people to the city, mm-hmm. and it's going to boost everybody up.
Okay.
And for us, because we're so close here, and this end of the boardwalk,
right.
I think, because Kevin's got 1,000 rooms there, which is not a lot of rooms for a place that's that fantastic,
right.
We're going to get some of that spillover, mm-hmm. and it's going to create a lot more walk traffic, mm-hmm. with everybody walking down there to see it.
Right.
That and statistics show that the more walk traffic you have,
right.
the more money you make automatically.
Right.
And we're redoing our whole ocean side of the building there, the mm-hmm. facade, so... You know, we'll be a lot prettier.
It's great. It's like having an attraction.
Sure.
The newest attraction is going to be major news when it opens right in your backyard.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's great for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all the casinos that's in the town are going to be get a boost from that.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think so. Although, I remember when the Borgata opened, at first, everybody, it sucked revenues out of every
right.
place pretty proportionally.
Yeah.
And I think that'll happen right away, like mm-hmm. maybe the first few months, for maybe even the first 6 months. But I think ultimately it's going to bring a lot more people.
Yeah, and that's what happened at the Borgata. They cannibalized market in
yeah.
you know, the first few months, but
right.
then they grew the whole.
They
everybody
did.
Floated up on.
And the difference is when the Borgata opened, people drove there and stayed there. You know,
right.
where are you going to go from the Borgata? You can't walk
exactly
anywhere.
Right.
Whereas down here, people are going to go check it out and then wander off to the other casinos
right.
as well.
Wait, see, that's a good point, because that brought people there, and maybe Harrah's benefited from some of that, but it's pretty tough walk from Borgata to mm-hmm. Harrah's too, but here I think Aaron's right, it's going to bring a lot more people right into the heart of this
right.
this critical mass of retail, dining, entertainment, and gaming.
No question.